Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, December 23rd, 2006, and I'm Harley Schlanger. I'll be your host today. As we come to the end of this year, there is a real reason to hope that next year will be the beginning of positive change for our nation and for humanity as a whole. The defeat of Bush and Cheney and the neocons on November 7th means that we'll have a new Congress, with the Democrats in control of the House and the Senate, reversing 12 years of Republican control. Though Bush is still speaking of staying the course in Iraq with a so-called surge of troops, and Cheney has on his desk plans for launching a new war against Iran, there is a drumbeat growing, led by Lyndon LaRouche, for a double impeachment. And leading Democrats are building the case for it, as they now have positions as chairman of the committees responsible for oversight. On last week's show, I had a panel of LaRouche Youth Movement members, and we discussed what Lyndon LaRouche has called the new politics. We examined the brilliant flanking maneuvers conducted by the LIM prior to November 7th, which catalyzed an expansion of young voters and provided the margin of victory. We also reviewed the further application of this concept in the stunning upset victory by Democrat Ciro Rodriguez over a seven-term incumbent Republican Bonilla in a special election in Texas, where a contingent of seven members of the LIM played the leading role in assuring the defeat of the Bush baby Bonilla. Today we're going to discuss a special aspect of the new politics, that of the role of singing and classical music, and what LaRouche has called the choral principle in classical music. Now, before I get to our special guest, I just want to give you a little bit more from LaRouche on this concept from an article he wrote in the EIR on the new politics, where he writes of the need to overcome what he calls the mechanistic methods of thought, especially among youth who have been miseducated. And this miseducation trains people to think this way, mechanistically, which he writes dulls the creative potentials of the mind of most of our society. The good news is that this kind of mechanistic thinking can be reversed, as the LIM has demonstrated by what LaRouche calls the mass effect. And the special way that this is done is through a special curriculum in the sciences, where you study Kusa, Leonardo da Vinci, Johannes Kepler in particular. And then in music, the classical compositional method. And what LaRouche says about this is that the new politics is defined by a new quality of emphasis on the role of the individual through scientific and classical artistic modes of creativity, a change which must be rooted in the development of the individual and coordinated creative potentials for our young adult population as a whole. So today we're going to explore this idea of the choral principle, and I'd like to welcome to the show John Segerson.
Hi.
Also, we have a panel with John of members of the LaRouche Youth Movement, Jenny Katachu and Matthew Ogden from Boston, who just were involved in very extensive work with Maestro Briano from Mexico and John. And also Anna Shaven joins us from Los Angeles. Anna was in Boston for this week, intensive week of work with Maestro Briano as well. Now, John, we have a lot to cover in a short time today, and I know you've brought some musical examples, which I hope we'll have access to. But why don't we just start by taking up the question of how do you see this question of the choral principle? How does it work?
Well, picking up on what those citations from Mr. LaRouche, what comes to mind is the famous dictum by Friedrich Schiller that the greatest work of art is the creation of political freedom. Most people, it sounds very nice, but the question is what really does that mean, a work of art? And that's exactly what we're getting at here, because freedom has a content. Of course, it's not just unbridled, arbitrary freedom. It's freedom to be creative. And there are two primary realms in which we can be most creative. One is in the physical sciences, and also, which is part of economics as well, in terms of the organization of our society to maximize its potential and its growth. The second, though, also is how to organize ourselves as a society and as and made up of institutions and social units and individuals, in order to achieve that aim. The great art is precisely in that along those latter lines when you're looking at it as not simply merely entertainment. What you're working on when you're working in great art is you're working in the realm of creativity, not creating things, but rather creating ideas or ways of getting things done. These are true ideas or Platonic ideas, so that your primary aim in all artistic creativity is to be able to not just do that, but also to get it across and create forms of higher social organization amongst the people who are listening, the people who are actually witnessing the performance of great music and also participating in it. The work that we're doing with the LaRouche Youth Movement is that we have found that for a number of reasons, working with in choruses is one of the most effective ways of getting these ideas across in the most efficient and powerful way. There are other ways that you can do it. You can do it in the course of forming a very tightly knit acting troupe, for instance, and we've done some experimentation with that. The thing about the choral singing, though, is we found that it's probably the most ideal way of working with young people who are in the process of learning how to control their voices and how they speak and how they sing, and getting them into a situation where they can in a very playful and social way be able to communicate this as rapidly as possible to everyone else who we're organizing.
Well, let me go right to Jenny on that to ask her, since you've been doing a lot of this, especially this Christmas season, how does the choral principle function as part of the new politics, Jenny?
Well, this has been a very profound shift that's gone on over the recent months, especially with this recent visit of Maestro Briano to Boston. But one thing that kind of captures it is a sign that we had out organizing the last week where we had this classic picture of Howard Dean when he was screaming right around the time of the 2004 election. And, you know, said, well, the old politics is the Dean scream. The new politics is singing, right? Hmm. And so one thing that we've really been able to capture over the last few weeks is to take a season, Christmas season, where people are open to beautiful music, but to actually bring a sense of irony to the music that people are accustomed to, and also to remind them that they're living in a real political a real political world, a world that's changing. And so we've taken these classic Christmas carols, rewritten the words, some of them more all of them funny words about Cheney, Bush, things like that. I think you're going to hear an example later. But we're bringing these two people sung beautifully. And so we're not only standing out in the streets, organizing people and with a quartet constantly singing, but we're also going to people's neighborhoods and bringing them this this beautiful music. And the response has been absolutely incredible. Unprecedented for anything that I've ever seen before. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that the American population has a real sense of optimism following this recent election.
Mm-hmm. We'll be getting back to Jenny and the other two members of the youth panel in a moment. You're listening to The LaRouche Show. We're live every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And I would encourage you to go to the LaRouche Pack website, where there's a nice big wreath right at the top, and I think the Christmas carols are right there for you to look at, and you can listen to them.
Now,
John, what I'd like to do is get you to introduce listeners to these ideas in music. I know you have some musical examples, so where would you like to begin?
I'm sorry, I would, Harley?
Yeah, I was just saying
yes.
That I know you brought some examples, and hopefully we won't have technical difficulties, but we want to introduce the listeners to how these ideas work.
Right.
So where would you like to begin?
Yeah, I want to begin by, we just solved our technical difficulties here, so we can begin.
Very good.
I just want to begin with a clip of the that from a rehearsal that we held up in Boston of the very wonderful piece by Mozart called Ave Verum Corpus. We use this as a way of getting at the real ideas behind these great classical works, because the ideas are not just in the notes. The ideas are as the great composer, the great conductor Wilhelm Furtwängler would like to say, they're actually behind or between the notes. And it is exactly the same kind of subtle shifts that you're dealing with in a piece like this that you're doing, that you're working on when you're working with, for instance, the ideas of Johannes Kepler in working on the orbital motions, of the planetary motions. These mm-hmm. motions are complex. They're not simply simple circles, and indeed they're not just simple ellipses, too. They're constantly changing. And that's the kind of issues that you're getting at with the Ave Verum. So first I'd just like to play this piece, and then I'll show you a little bit about how we got there. Here we go.
Thank you.
Well, that was quite beautiful, John. What were we listening to? What is there that the listener should be thinking and hearing something like that?
Well, the beauty of this piece, and that's why we focused on this one, and then the more complex one, the Jesu meine Freude by Bach, a motet with many parts, is because it represents a single unitary idea, which is trying to get across. In this case, Ave Verum Corpus is a standard work, but it especially in the it moves in a way which brings up this issue of the non-linearity of the well-tempered system, the system of music that was discovered by J.S. Bach, and it points in the direction of many, many other works to follow, also by Beethoven and by Brahms, in the same way. It is extremely simple. It is has the shifts in what are called modalities, which we can show in a little bit. The main reason why I wanted to show this is play this also, though, is because the people we are the LaRouche Youth Movement is not although we like to have people who can come in who are already somewhat skilled in singing. In many cases, the people who join have absolutely no skills whatsoever when they come in. In some cases, their voices are slightly damaged. They have many defects. And some of the people in the chorus that you just heard still are struggling with very basic things. Nonetheless, what we found is that if you focus in the right direction, which is the beautiful beautiful sound, a so-called bel canto sound, that you can even with voices which may have their individual flaws, you can create something of really incredible of incredible beauty. And what I wanted to do is just give you a sense of some of the way that we work with the voices, if that's okay.
Yes, I think you have some warm-up examples of how the bel canto, how the voice is placed, the kinds of things you have to do to accomplish that.
Yeah, these are just two little examples. It's sort of when you're learning something like singing, this is a long and patient process. There are no quick fixes. You have to work very long and slow and hard. You have to make sure that the vocal mechanism does not get tightened. So it's a kind of calisthenics in a certain way.
Now, John, this is a particular problem in our culture because we don't have the bel canto training of children the way you really should if you're going to have a decent human society.
Yeah, you find people with all sorts of vocal defects. Let me just demonstrate in my own voice some of these ideas of problems of vocal defects. I'm going to have to hold the microphone a little bit further away to do this. But for instance, you have the so-called open voice, which you hear, right? I'm just going to do the Jesu meine Freude, the opening line in a couple of different ways here. This is sort of your open type of voice. Jesu meine Freude. Right, that's sort of your very popular music thing. Then you have
it's almost as Bob Dylan's.
Yeah, basically, right. And then you have a so-called chesty voice, which a lot of men actually start out with, which is something like this. Jesu meine Freude. Right, like that. Right, it's very much in the chest. You hear a lot of chest resonance, but there's almost none of the upper resonance. And then you have various other types of defects, like, for instance, you have a person with a very tight voice, which is squeezed in the throat, for instance, like this. Jesu meine Freude. Right? That's a throaty voice. And then you have other types, which you have one where the voice is actually bottled up. For instance, take something like this. Jesu meine Freude.
It's almost like you're swallowing the words.
Right, like
there.
It's swallowed. So these are all various types of defects. Ironically, one teacher of our teacher, Maestro Briano, would like to put it this way. He said that the best voice is actually the sum or the combination of all of its defects. Just to give you an example of what it ought to sound more like, something like this.
Jesu meine Freude.
So it's a combination of those things. And so that let me just give you a sample of a warm-up that the maestro was doing in Boston women's voices, and just a very simple one. So different voices, different people. Right there, so you can see already, and from what I was saying about the defects, each one of those voices is quite different from the other one. Some of them more developed than others, and the process is to get them all not sounding identical, but to exploit especially the upper resonating. Upper resonating cavities. Let me just give one other example. This is of the same group doing one exercise, which is a little bit more complicated. And you'll see, and they're singing, I think, a little bit higher. Okay, I don't want to go any further.
Now, John, we don't have too much time to go into more detail on the singing, although I think it's important. But what are you looking for, then, as a choral director in these kinds of exercises? What do you want people to do with their voices?
The main idea here, and the reason why they were working on the N, that is na, ne, ni, emphasizing the N, is what you want to do is to close the voice, by which means that you want to create a lazing effect so that the vocal cords are in coordination with the upper resonating cavities and the lower ones too, to a certain extent, are able to create a focused and lazed sound rather than an open sound, so you get that focus. And to do that throughout one's range, but also to do it in a way that's also pleasant and vibrated. It's not straight, by which I mean not ah, but ah, with a vibrato, because that's a part of the human voice, is that vibrato.
And Matthew, let me just ask you this, because Boston started out really as the choral local or the singing local. How much work do you do on a daily basis on the singing, between the warm-ups, the exercises, the singing together, sectionals? How much time per day do you sing?
Well, everybody gets 2 hours per day. The key is consistent work on a every single day basis. Like John said, there's no quick fixes or shortcuts, but it's just consistent hard work. So we have three sectionals that happen every day, two groups of men and one group of women. And every single day, people work for 2 hours on their voices, outside of the singing out on the streets and for the population.
Now, with the bel canto, you're able to sing 2 hours a day without wrecking your voice, I take it.
Sure, it's supposed to improve your voice.
I mean, we have no Rod Stewart type sounds coming out.
Well, you have people who have their end up with vocal problems and so forth, but usually it's because of one of these defects is getting the better of them.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you put a chorus together, when you start to take up the second question, which is polyphony, and we've just discussed the question of bel canto, the vocal placement, registration, and so on, but the second factor in the choral principle is that of polyphony. So, John, how does that function?
All great.
Actually, John, let me come back to that. I just see a note here that, Fletcher just changed his mind. Go ahead. You have two and a half minutes.
Okay, great. All great music is polyphonic. It has multiple voices. Polyphony is a kind of reflection of the way your mind really ought to work anyway in all circumstances, and also the way a society ought to work. For instance, when you're thinking of doing something, or when you're doing anything, interacting, trying to think of a new idea, or communicating to somebody, you should have thousands of people whispering to you, you know, in the back of your mind, maybe possibly across generations or across centuries, voices talking to you in various ways, the voices of great thinkers of the past. And, any great idea, any great expression of an idea has to reflect that. That's why so much popular music is really very mind-deadening, because it only has one line, and usually sometimes only one expression of the line, which is even worse. You want to have multiple voices, and this is a principle which was opened up by J.S. Bach in his writings, and then that spawned a whole number of future generations of these great polyphonists, all the way extending through Beethoven and through Johannes Brahms in the late 19th century.
And that's why the Jesu Meine Freude was selected by Lyndon LaRouche then.
Yes, it's one of the greatest challenges of this, because it has tremendous vocal challenges built into it. Some people have told us that we have no business trying to do this with bel canto voices, and I could say something about that maybe a bit after the break.
Well, we'll take that up, plus this question of the comma and the Pythagorean comma and polyphony, but we're going to go to a break right now. You're listening to The LaRouche Show. It's live on the web every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And the discussion we're having today on the New Politics will be archived. Music, the choral principle in the New Politics will be archived. If you go to the LaRouche Pub website, where it says LaRouche Show on the left-hand side, you can scroll up an archive of all the past shows. And actually, that'd be a good way to show your friends and people you're trying to organize the full depth of this movement, in particular the development of the LaRouche Youth Movement, as it has grown over the last year to a position of importance politically, not just for this nation, but for all of Ibero-America and for Europe as well. If you're interested in receiving some literature from us, and you should be if you want this next year to be a good year, give us a call at 800-929-7566. Tell them you've been listening to The LaRouche Show and you would like to receive a packet of literature on the campaign of Lyndon LaRouche to mobilize and change the nation, transform the nation, and also the work of the LaRouche Youth Movement. That number is 800-929-7566. We're not going to be taking emails today because I want to give our guests the maximum amount of time to speak. So we're back on with the LaRouche Show, and our guests today are John Segerson and Jenny, Matthew, and Anna from the LaRouche Youth Movement. John, before we get into the comma, let me just bring Anna in, because Anna had the opportunity to be in Boston this time for the work with Maestro Briano and yourself. Anna, what was your impression of the development from the last time? I think you were there earlier this year, the development of the voices and the singing overall.
Oh, I thought it was I mean, I think there's been a lot of development. I mean, one thing is just the development of the local as a whole. I mean, one thing about Boston is, since it was organized around the chorus, there is a difference in social relationships there. And each member sees themselves, you know, they kind of have an identity in the chorus, and that kind of carries over into all their activity. That was the main thing that I noticed. But, yeah, the voices are much stronger.
So that, in a sense, is what Lynn is talking about with this idea of the choral principle, that you are taking a society which is broken down and ugly and trying to reintroduce the human qualities then.
Let me point out a little parallel, just as an aside. This came to my mind recently, is that if you look at Nicholas of Cusa's Concordantia Cattolica, which is his major seminal work, where he outlines the principles which later on get really adopted almost wholesale in the American Constitution. What's interesting to note is that it's all framed. Cusa's ideas are framed from the standpoint of how these political ideas will work within the context of what was called the conciliar movement, the movement of councils. That is, he wasn't actually talking about America or anything, even a nation. He was talking about a movement. I think that the idea of there's a kind of a parallel from that in the kind of what Anna was talking about in terms of the social organization of a chorus. In a certain way, the same principles of the social relations, when you're in a playful and happy way working through principles and working through the realization and communication of principles, it's exactly that which is a paradigm for the kind of work that needs to be done all throughout society in terms of the work on reconstructing the economy, for instance. If it's not done that way, if it's done in a stiff and unmusical way, as Lyndon LaRouche points out quite a bit when some of these congressmen ask him, if you do anything in a stiff and unmusical way, it won't work, even if you may think that you're doing the right things.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Anna, just so the listeners get a sense of this, we know that Boston is known as the Athens of the United States. Many people look at Los Angeles as the Ashcan of the United States. I'm sure from your organizing, you discover that people, even on the West Coast, are struck by the beauty of singing when we bring it into the organizing, are they not?
Yeah, they really are. We were at the Beverly Center yesterday, which is in the middle of Beverly Hills. It's a big mall. And we sang through the entire motet, and it was a quintet of organizers. And people out here, they might not, you know, whereas maybe in other places they recognize it's classical music or it's Bach, or they might recognize the melody. People here, it's almost complete shock and awe. But people are very struck, and, you know, they come back, and they can't help but notice what we're doing.
I notice you use the
term completely
shock and
different.
Awe. Perhaps Bush's new policy should be to send a limb chorus to Baghdad, and we can shock and awe them with the beauty of classical culture.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, there's really a lot of potential out here with the chorus.
And there's a lot of work for you.
Yes.
John, we're talking about the new politics and the role of singing and the choral principle in affecting the kinds of changes among youth to move from mechanistic thinking to the kind of dynamic thinking which is essential for a renaissance. Now, we've talked about the physical principle of bel canto. We've just started to discuss this idea of polyphony, but there's a specific aspect in polyphony which reflects another physical principle, that of the Pythagorean comma, and the way that you can introduce new singularities in the music. Can you just give us a sense of the importance of this, both for classical music as a whole, but specifically for the singing, the polyphony?
Sure. There's a common misconception about the well-tempered system and scales and music in general, that somehow there's, and especially when it comes to questions of being in tune. Many even professional musicians fall into this trap. They believe that somehow there's some absolute perfect pitch for every single frequency, for every single one of the pitches of a musical scale. In actuality, the situation is much more complex. Just as in planetary orbits and planetary systems and so forth, you have multiply connected motions. The same thing works in music, and it's impossible to simply say that there's one specific absolute frequency for a given pitch. There are adjustments that you can call them adjustments or shifts that need to be made depending on where you're at. That these shifts are in many cases about the amount of what is called a comma. It's a very small, subtle shift, which I hope you'll be able to hear in this example that I'm going to play for you.
John,
yeah.
What exactly determines where there is a need for a shift?
Well, you'll hear it in this one. It's a question of what happens is if there is in polyphony, if there's movement in other voices. Other than your own, then this requires you to do something different. And the worst thing in a singing ensemble or an orchestra or really a string quartet it comes up is to simply stubbornly say, I'm singing the right note and I don't care what anybody says. I know this note is right. There's a give, but it's a very specific kind of give.
And again, just before we get to the example, the composers utilize that, right? It's conscious. They know it exists.
Oh, they expect it to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, because this is living music. It's not dead. That's why you can't really have. I mean, they've got some pretty darn good synthesizers out there now. I've looked at some, but you can't really have human music without these kinds of subtle shifts, which really are they're very much dependent on all sorts of factors, including the room that you're in and who you're singing to. These are important factors, and so you can't just program these things in.
And just to make one final point on that, it also underlines why it's important to not think mechanistically. What Lyndon LaRouche means when he talks about human creativity being part of a dynamic process of transformation as opposed to some kind of statistical, mechanical method.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what you're going to hear is a little section of that same Ave Verum that we did. This is the middle part, cuius latus perforatum, which means whose side was pierced in Latin. But they're doing it, I think, on vowels. I think nu and no here. And what we're specifically focusing in on is the relationship between the soprano, which is the highest, you know, women's voice, and the alto voice, to get the intonation just right. And you'll hear there's a shift that some of them have done because we had discussed it before, but they were sort of surprised at themselves for having done it right. And then we have a little discussion of it. So sharpen your ears and see if you can hear these shifts. Hear that?
The sopranos and the altos are not, it's not a good chord. Just the soft altos, ready?
A lot of experimentation you have to do here.
You did. You did. It worked just great. I thought you were doing it consciously.
But that's why the first one has to be a little bit low, so then when they go up, right, you have to just go up a little bit.
Like that.
Once again.
Together now. And so forth. That's the process.
Well, this you can tell from even on the problems you have with hearing this over a computer that this requires an incredible amount of concentration, which is obviously one of the other aspects of it. Matthew, you're doing some conducting, aren't you?
Sure. Jenny and I and other people are trying to figure out how to do this same kind of rehearsal process.
So when you have the opportunity to work with John and Brianna, what kind of things are you looking for to help you better direct a chorus?
Well, Maestro Brianna stressed that the role of the teacher is to strengthen the ear, because no matter how advanced the voice or no matter how advanced the chorus is, he stressed that the singer will never be able to maintain the level that they've achieved unless there's a further level of achievement that they're trying to attain. And that's difficult. In one sense, it's a little bit easier to work with lesser developed voices and a lesser developed chorus because it's a little bit obvious what has to happen. But as you get to a more developed level, it requires a lot more of the teacher. So it's very beneficial when both John and Maestro Brianna come, because you get another level of idea of what it means to actually work with a sense of developing other people. And that's the other aspect of it also, because the kind of emotional commitment that Maestro Brianna has and also John has to the development of a whole group of other people is something that takes a lot of work to develop personally as a teacher also. That's the other aspect, not just the technical know-how.
Well, in a discussion I had with Mr. LaRouche not too long ago, we were discussing one of the Mozart string quartets, and he said that our job is to learn to hear with Mozart's ear. And he said in particular, think about Mozart working with Haydn on the Bach, and when they worked on the Art of the Fugue and some other of the Bach fugues that were brought back to Vienna, they sang them. They sang them as well as playing them on instruments. So obviously with singing, John, what is the special quality of singing then that enables you to engage the mind on this higher level?
Well, there's the technical side, and then there's the side of putting it all together. The technical side is still very challenging. This is an unresolved problem that I just wanted to bring up, which is why the Jesu meine Freude is such a great challenge. Most choruses sing this piece, especially with the tenors, which is the most difficult line. They sing it with unplaced voices. It's very high. The tenor line goes very high. And it's specifically, it's very difficult right now in our modern day, because I'm convinced that during Bach's day, you didn't have these big strapping tenor voices that you have today. There have been real advances in health and in generally the size that people grow. Also, men, people grow up more quickly. It used to be that a male voice would remain high and unchanged, and puberty would onset of puberty would be around the age 17. That's very late now. And so you have a lot of very big tenor voices, and it requires a very high degree of technical mastery to be able to sing Bach in a free way. I think it's the level of technical mastery that only some of the finest singers of the last centuries have been able to achieve, an Enrico Caruso, for instance, in the tenors, and also somebody like a Montserrat Caballé when you're speaking of sopranos. Mm-hmm. So that you've got. The other side of it, though, is this question of what you is generally called phrasing. Music is not just a bunch of notes. Music is ultimately an idea which spans an entire work, which is the reason why the Ave Verum is so useful there. But also every aspect of it, in terms of the way you move from one note to the next, or you move from one phrase to the next, has to have that same kind of unity of action. And one of the biggest things that I've been working on the most hard on, mm-hmm. is how you actually move your voice in a way, in a beautiful way. It's not a question of singing beautiful notes. It's a question of moving beautifully.
Mm-hmm. And you have an example, I think, from the Jesu that you were going to play for us. Let me just mention to the listeners that you're listening to the LaRouche Show. We're here. It's Saturday, the 23rd of December, 2006. Next week, we'll probably have a year-in-review show as we get ready for 2007. We have about 12 minutes to go on this show, so, John, I'd like you to present the example you have from the Jesu and then just open it up for Anna, Matthew, and Jenny. So why don't you tell us what we're going to hear?
Okay, this is just another excerpt. This is a little part of the rehearsal that we did. This is... and again, it has things that are drawbacks and things that are not perfect, but it gives you an idea of the how we're working on it. Also, you'll hear that the tenors are a little bit too strong. Many of the tenors here have not figured out yet how to get their voices completely in the head, and so sometimes they cover up some of the other parts. But I'm having them all sing because they need the work. And again, see, you hear the phrasing. See, they started very stiff. And now it moves a little bit better. Tenors.
is available, I think, on the website that we have available some of the rehearsals. Is it not, Jenny? Do you know where they can find that if the listeners want to look for it?
Oh, we should make public the location. It's been posted. We'll make it public on the LaRouche Youth Movement website, WLYM.com. I don't think it's available right now. The Jesu Meine Freude is on the main webcast page for Lyndon LaRouche's last webcast.
All right, well, we have about 7 minutes to go. Let me open it up to Anna, Jenny, and Matthew if you have anything you want to bring up with John or discuss in terms of this question of the choral principle.
Well, I just think it's important to think about the fact that why this is such a efficient way of actually making a political change. Because one discovery that I've made, and I think people are really beginning to make, and why LaRouche is really emphasizing the narrow pathway of Bach and Kepler, is that we have to actually change the culture of the United States if people are going to respond to the kind of political change that's necessary. Mm-hmm. And I think what's required of the LaRouche Youth Movement to perform these great works is a real passion. Because you can't daily fight to develop your voice to its biggest potential if you don't have the passion to communicate something to other people. And this is something that we've most very recently discovered, where you have the youngest members of the youth movement who have never sung a note in their lives, who are now, you know, passionately committed to having beautiful voices so that they can contribute something to the chorus. So this question of passion, I think, is very important. It's something that we don't have at all in the current culture, especially among young people.
Mm-hmm. Anna, Matthew, any comments from you?
Would you like to hear? I'd like to hear the one of these Christmas carols.
Well, I was sort of figuring we could go out on that.
Oh, okay, but, we can go out on it.
You know, I think the point Jenny's making is quite important, because as someone who's worked with the youth movement for years, you see some of the members getting a little older and starting to think, well, gee, am I going to become like a boomer as I get older? Am I going to lose the passion? And you know, Lynn has had some specific comments on that recently, including to the West Coast on the importance of really rolling up the sleeves and getting into the work on the choral work.
I mean, you got to realize that when people in the street walk past a chorus of young people who are talking about politics, and they're drawn in. If you are animated, if you're actually conscious of what you're singing, and you're not just sort of out there doing the grind, I have a nice voice, you know, or something, but you're conscious of that, you're actually bringing back what Bach had intended, then you're drawing people immediately into a creative process. There's no, they don't have to, it's not a recording, they're not, you know, sitting in an audience, you know, in a formal atmosphere, which is also important. It is important to perform these things in concert halls, but you're immediately, people can be brought into this dialogue that's going on.
One thing on that is this that I was thinking is the self-conscious element of it, because even this question of passion, like even if you begin singing, like you were saying, Jenny, and you really don't have the passion right at the beginning, what we found is that take the motet, and as you continue to sing it, it actually changes the way that you're thinking, so you can maybe start off on not the highest level, but then through the singing and through the interaction of the other voices and just what you're doing politically, it actually develops in you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's clear.
Sure. Bach is reaching across the centuries to help you become a better organizer and more human.
But it actually works on you.
Yeah, well, the motet itself is an experience. That's why Lynn chose it. It's not like, well, you know, Bach wrote 6 motets, let's just eeny, meeny, miny, mo and pick one. There's a specific experience that you go through, because you end with the same words that you begin with, Jesu, meine Freude. right? Bach had a very specific,
That means Jesus, my joy.
Right, Jesus, my joy, right. But think about, when you're singing those words at the end, think about what you've just gone through. You've gone through 11 intense pieces throughout the whole motet that are constantly changing, different combinations of voices, different text from the hymn, the original hymn itself, text from the letters of St. Paul. So that in itself is an experience. So, of course, yeah, it changes you.
Well, we're just about out of time, so we're going to hear this last piece, one of the Christmas carols. This has been the LaRouche Show. I'd like to thank John Segerson for joining us today and our panel, Matthew, Jenny, and Anna. This is archived, so you can get your friends to listen to it, and you can join us next week. And if you want some literature, if you want to become part of this movement, give us a call at 800-929-7566. So, John, why don't you play this last piece we have.
Here we go.
We wish Dick would leave the White House. We wish Dick would leave the White House. We wish Dick would leave the White House and go straight to jail. Dick Cheney likes torture. He thinks it's real nice. His wife often beats him to prepare him for vice. We'll give him some bread and water. We'll give him some bread and water. We'll give him some bread and water and a big man named Biff. Dick Cheney likes torture. He thinks it's real nice. His wife often beats him to prepare him for vice. We'll give him some S&M clothes. We'll give him some S&M clothes. We'll give him some S&M clothes and his wife's whips and chains. Dick Cheney likes torture. He thinks it's real nice. His wife often beats him to prepare him for vice. He won't go unless evicted. He won't go unless evicted. He won't go unless evicted in handcuffs and chains. Since 2002, LaRouche has led the fight to dump Cheney, so get out of bed. We wish Dick would leave the White House. We wish Dick would leave the White House. We wish Dick would leave the White House and go straight to jail.